Alrighty, we are live now with North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Coach and I were just, as you might have tuned in here a little bit, just talking about the Patriots game last night. And Coach, terrific, terrific game.
Oh, definitely. Extremely entertaining. He had, you know, two teams that the more they meet, the deeper the rivalry gets. Last minute wins by one side or the other, as we go back to the history of the contest between the two teams, and it just adds to the fun and the anticipation of seeing them play a team like Seattle. Seattle's had the upper hand the last couple of times outside of the Super Bowl. Doesn't make up certainly for that Super Bowl loss, but it shows you how evenly matched the two teams are. And when you have two quality coaches that are scheming against each other on these rare occasions, it's a whole lot of fun to see.
It was, and I think for Patriots fans, they got to feel pretty good about the way this team is right now. And of course, the awful, awful tragedy to James White's family just put a pall over the whole thing. But the Patriots, played very well on the field, and I just can't imagine, what James White and his friends on the Patriots are going through. But especially the White family, I mean, that's just insane. No, God, it's just horrible. Coach,
and it just shows you what the Patriots do. He's such a valuable member of that receiving corps coming out of the backfield. He had 70 plus catches last year. So you know what he's worth, and you know what his value is to the offense and to Josh McDaniels as he's scheming out the game plan. And it just goes to, it just speaks to the level of next man up, playing for the team, playing for your teammates. And we also saw that on the Seattle side, they had several guys out injured. They had the guy thrown out of the game. And he's going down the depth chart on his safeties. And these guys stepped up and made plays.
I can't believe N'Keal Harry. Was it him who got hit? I can't believe he got up after that play.
Yeah. And they were bringing the, as we used to say, bringing the leather. Edelman took a hellacious beating out there, and he kept getting up. He'd shake his head, and he'd get back in there, and he'd go down the field again.
Great game, great game. Well, all right, we got, I hope, a great show here this evening. We got a lot to talk about with a lot of people to talk with. We'll start off in a few minutes with the Danvers High School Athletics Director, Andy St. Pierre. Rockport High School boys coach, boys soccer coach, Dave Curley, will be on hand in this half hour if all goes well. We'll talk to Gloucester High School Director of Athletics, Brian LaFada, later on. Also check in on the local and national golf scene with sports writer Gary Larrabee, and we're going to talk NBA playoffs once again with Mike Grenier. So that's all upcoming here on MSO News Sports on this North Shore Sports Night. So we hope that you will stick with us and spread the word. You can email us too at msonewsports@gmail.com.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of KPN Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our office as a call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, CapeAnnSavings.Bank.
Member FDIC, member DIF, Equal Housing Lender. Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
All right, we're back, sort of. Man, I'm a mess tonight. I want to welcome the Danvers High School Director of Athletics, Andy St. Pierre. Andy, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. How are you guys doing?
I'm okay. Tim isn't here, but he should be. I wish he were.
No, I'm here, Rick. And Andy, speak quickly, because Rick will probably cut you up in the next 30 seconds.
Accidentally, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, watch out, man. Watch out.
Yeah.
Andy, it's been... obviously, a crazy spring, a crazy summer, and I don't want to say that, there's a sense of normalcy here, or normality, whatever the right word is. But for us fans, high school fans, college fans, and whatever, it's to me, it's exciting. Tim has a different take on it, but it's very exciting for me to see that the kids are sort of going to get to play here. And I just wonder, before we talk about some of the teams back on the field for you guys. What's the overall viewpoint from your vantage, Andy, in terms of how things are developing here going back to school?
Yeah, I think so far so good. You know, caution is the word of the day. I think that's everyone's taking a cautious approach. But with that, I think things need to go on, and kids need this aspect of their lives back, in my opinion. You know, getting back from the social-emotional standpoint and making those connections and, you know, that sense of belonging that, you know, so many kids rely on from sports, that they get in sports, not necessarily in the school building, you know, but afterwards. That's an important part of the growing process, and, you know, the young people at that age, you know, that connection piece. So, you know, everyone's very excited, you know, get back at it, but do it the right way.
I'm talking with...
be very cautious and be smart about it, and, you know, making sure that we know that this whole thing's not over. You know, we still have to be smart. Kids need to space out. They need to wear their masks. You know, it's not going to work if kids aren't doing that and coaches aren't enforcing that. So that's a challenge that we're all sort of undertaking right now.
And in terms of what the coaches are talking with, I mean, the captains, I'm sure, have to lead the way. But what I saw, and you know, a few weeks ago when the kids had that rally over in Danvers Square, the kids were, first of all, extremely polite, and every single kid, you know, had the mask on, every single one there. So, you know, and that included seniors on down to freshmen. So they're getting the message. And also, weren't there some summer programs where kids were allowed to participate in some sports?
Yeah, a lot of youth programs and club sports, and they were all going under certain rule modifications themselves. So they were playing, and these kids were used to it, you know, and they didn't fight it. They know that's what they have to do in order to play. Parents get it. You know, we had, and with my own kids in Little League, we had to bring our own chairs, masks, sanitizer, all that stuff for the kids. And you just kind of, you get in the groove, and it becomes the new normal for that season, and it's not a big deal, because you know at the end of the day, that's what you have to do to play. So I don't anticipate a lot of problems, but, you know, I will tell you, one of my colleagues in Beverly, Dan Keith, he's talking to his student-athletes, because they started back today, and he takes a quick poll of them and saying, who here plays a winter or spring sport? And they raise their hand. He says, well, do the right thing now and make sure you can have those seasons by wearing your mask, doing what we're asking you to do, and playing the game by these new rules, because that's the only way you're going to get those next couple seasons, is to do it smartly and do it right now.
Yeah, boy, a reality check. Tim, you want to check in here?
You know, I'm just fearful. We're waiting on the curve. We know how kids are, as good as they've been. We can't monitor all of the kids, all of the parents, of where they've been, and is everybody gonna, you know, say where they've been? Have they been in crowds? I'm just worried about a backlash like we've seen around the country where we've opened things up, and all of a sudden you've seen these surges. And I know the state has, our state has been has had the numbers low, but you know, 400 people a day are still coming down with it. It's in the 20s in terms of people dying every day, and it's just a scary proposition that this could suddenly blow up in everybody's faces, and you're going to have a whole lot more issues to deal with, you know, not only in terms of sports, but in terms of, you know, kids getting back to even just a hybrid aspect of going to school, that it could be all remote within a month or so.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a chance you have to take that goes to sports or school, and I think just being prepared for it now is the best you can do. You know, putting that plan in place to say, if this happens, then we pivot and we go this way. And these are the steps we have to take. You know, that's a big part of why in Danvers we're not starting until October 2nd. A lot of people started today and are starting in the next couple of days in our league. You know, we were focused on getting school off the ground, get the kids back in a safe manner, make sure things are still going the right way before we open up into the co-curriculars and athletics. So we took a, you know, more cautious approach for that reason, to make sure we're doing things the right way. And, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I know most of the people I've spoken with, no one's trying to force feed this whole thing. If the numbers don't dictate it, or the data goes against what we're seeing, people will shut it down. No one's going to try to force the season in right now. I mean, there's a likelihood that some communities around here go into red and they're not going to play for several weeks, if not the rest of the season. That's a real possibility, and everyone in our room knows that. So I don't think there's this feeling like, yeah, we need to just get through this and get it done. I think it's, here's an opportunity. If we can do it correctly, do it safely, let's do it for the kids. You know, but if the numbers don't bear that out, then we pump the brakes and we pull back a little bit and reevaluate. I think everyone's sort of in that boat, it would be my guess.
What's the feeling been among parents, Andy? Because, as an educator, as the director of athletics and coaching and so on, you guys, I mean, nobody cares more for the kids except possibly the parents. And so, you know, obviously you're gonna proceed with caution. But in general, when you have all these get-togethers and meetings, trying to figure out what's going on, what's been the consensus among parents?
For me, the parent responses are very positive. They want their kids to be in a good place mentally, physically, and that comes from sports, and I think they appreciate that. I can only speak from Danvers, but we're very thorough in what we do. Nothing's by the seat of our pants. You know, there's a lot of discussions behind closed doors and getting a lot of feedback from people and making sure we're doing what's in the best interest of our kids. And I think our parents support that, and they buy into that, and they know that. So, I think the parents trust that we'll do it safely within the rules, and we're not going to cut corners. And we certainly by no means have plans to do that. So we're going to do everything within the guidelines from EEA and the MIAA, and that's going to be, unfortunately, that's going to affect the game and the product and what the fans and parents see. We're going to limit home attendance for games. You know, no one's going to be on the field more than the players and the coaches and the trainer. It's going to be very different. No access to the press box. You know, fans aren't going to be in the bleachers for us. They're going to be bringing their own chairs, sitting on the grass area. So it's going to be a different game, there's no doubt about it, but I think parents are okay with that because they want their kids to play and get at least some semblance of a season, especially seniors who did their last hurrah, you know, and do it safely. And I think everyone's in the same boat. We're all rolling in the same direction on that one.
How are we going to have access, like after a game? Am I going to be able to go to interview coaches or players with my mask on?
Yeah, that's something that media will have to talk before you come, just give us a heads up so we know you're going to be in the area. You are allowed access in that area, so we have to make sure that we're keeping our distance and making sure everyone's wearing masks, which I know wouldn't be an issue. But, yeah, I think that sort of stuff is fine. But, you know, to have unfettered access to the field and stadium, it gets into a hygiene issue where sanitizing after each event, it was near impossible for us to do. So we couldn't have people in the bleachers because we often stack our games. We'll have one game at 4 and another game in the evening. We wouldn't have the time or ability to clean the surfaces properly. So that's sort of where it's all coming from. It's all from the EEA guidelines and the outdoor gathering limitations that we're faced with right now. So, there's a lot of pieces that are affected by these new rules. It's sort of an ongoing thing that we're adjusting to on the fly. We're going to do our best to educate parents and coaches and the kids in the coming days about it you know, and hope for good cooperation and kind of make the best of it.
Tremendous. Finally, Andy, in terms of scheduling, how is that working out, and what are the logistics of that? How are you guys doing that?
So we worked on it last week. We're sticking in the league right now, so the teams that can play in the league have been scheduled in. With that being said, there are our teams are starting, I think, three different dates. One was today, one might be Wednesday or Thursday, and then we don't start till the 2nd. So it's sort of a tiered approach in terms of who can play when. But with that, so we'll start later in terms of the gameplay and practice play, but we'll all end up with 10 games at the end of the day for most of the sports. So although we'll be shorter on the seasons, the schedule will work so everyone will have the same amount of games for the most part. So, you know, it's as equitable as you can be at this stage, I think, given the parameters that everyone's in sort of a different, unique situation in their own school community.
Great.
But, I mean, it's worked. The ADs got together last week. You know, we kind of talked about what we wanted the schedule to be, how we wanted it to look. At the end of the day, we're all in that room to get our kids games. That's what we're trying to do. So are we going to be playing our rival twice and everything? No, it's not going to work out that way. But we're going to get 10 games in our league, and that's sort of at the end of the day what our goal was, and I think we've been able to achieve that.
Wow, a lot of stuff there. Hey, Andy, listen, good luck. I'll talk to you later. Sleep well, and for heaven's sake, stay safe. But thanks for taking the time tonight. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care, Andy. All right, that is Andy St. Pierre. He is the Director of Athletics at Danvers High School. We're going to take a break, come back with Dave Curley, who is the Rockport Boys soccer coach. I left out soccer in the post, but I'll put that back up there. We're going to take another break here, and if I can find the right button. I need Tim in studio with me. That's the problem. Let me see. Where'd it go? Oh, there it is up there. Okay, we'll be right back. Blue Collar Lobster at the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, is open daily from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. for takeout, outdoor dining, or inside table service at the Cafe Seven Seas. Blue Collar Lobster offers high-top tables with umbrellas, a tented area with tables and chairs, a canopy area with picnic tables, and seating in the open-air portion of Cafe Seven Seas, all with a view of the working harbor. Full bar service is available, and bartenders are ready to make you a delicious cocktail. Enjoy the food and the view, and stay as long as you like at Blue Collar Lobster, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. To view the Blue Collar Lobster menu, visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with Dave Curley. He's the Rockport High School boys soccer coach. And, Dave, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Rick. It's nice to talk to you and Tim. Thanks for the call.
Well, you know, it's such a weird time, but Rockport boys soccer getting ready to do it again. It's funny. I was talking with Jared Scarpacci up in Masco, and he was mentioning the success of Rockport High's boys soccer team and so on. And you guys, year in and year out, somehow seem to be at the top of the heap with the fewest kids. So how's it looking this year, Dave?
Well, we haven't been at the top of the heap, but we're very competitive. And it is getting increasingly more difficult, Rick, to compete, given our numbers in the KPN League. And primarily, it isn't so much the numbers, and I'm sure other coaches would agree. You're seeing more specialization in sports now. You're seeing kids spending more time on baseball players in the off season playing AAU ball around almost, you know, 12 months out of the year, or basketball players the same way, hockey players the same way, and of course soccer players. And being a small school that we are, it is the nice thing about it is if you come out for the team, you're going to be on the team. Now, whether you play or not, you've got to really, you know, work hard and earn yourself a starting spot. But we're not turning anybody away. We don't have tryouts. We basically have sign-ups. Last year's squad, I'll give you an example. We had 24 kids on our varsity squad. And of those 24, we did not have one club soccer player in the mix. They were all two- and three-sport athletes. We had 14 kids that played three sports. And all but four of the kids played two sports. And those four kids that weren't playing, that were only playing soccer, they were also avid surfers and skiers, and they would consider those to be their second and third sports. So we're competitive, Rick, because we have athletes. We have kids that come out, and they like to compete. They're used to being on teams. They're almost always really good team players, and they're athletic. But it's getting harder to compete with those really highly skilled teams. Jared's team up in Masco, if he's got a 20-man, 22-man roster there, I would be willing to bet half of them are playing club soccer and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, Tim, you support the multi-sport athlete.
Oh, I always do, because, you know, those are the kids primarily that over the course of the season hit their stride earlier. They're less likely to get hurt because throughout the season they're using all their different muscle groups, and so they're definitely much better conditioned. Would you agree with that, Dick?
I would agree with you completely, Tim. And what I would add to that is, without naming names, teams that we play in the Baker Division twice, I usually say to our guys, you know what? That team is probably as good as it's going to be all season long. We're going to get better. When we play them the next time, boys, we're going to be much better because they're athletes, and, you know, during the summer they're chasing the basketball around or they're chasing the hockey puck around, and they're not playing as much soccer as some of the club players are. And they, as the season goes on, we generally get better, and, you know, their skills get better and better. And like you said, they come in in good shape, and we are able to compete early on because of that. Could be a little interesting this fall, though. Could be the physicality of the game, I think, is going to be diminished as a result of some of the COVID rules, and that, I think, lends, you know, the skilled player is going to, I think, maybe have a little bit of an advantage this fall.
One of the things that I found with the multi-sport athlete and the kids, as you mentioned, that there are a lot of kids now that will focus on one sport all the way along, is that it really can have a detrimental effect, because and I encountered it when I was coaching baseball, is you've got kids that, you know, you expect them to be at your practice, you expect them to be at your games. And all of a sudden, they're bugging off because, oh, they've got an AAU game or they have an AAU practice. And it's like, no, you're playing on this team. Well, you know, I got to go play for that one. Well, and that just irks me because the parents allow them to do it.
And
if you hold it against the kids, you get called on the carpet as the coach.
Yeah, well, the parent's paying for it. That's why the parent's encouraging it. He's paying for the kid to be in that program. And fortunately, the bona fide team member rule, the MIA bona fide team member rule, helps somewhat now. They gave up, the MIA gave up at one point, as you recall, Tim, during the season, you played that sport and only that sport. And, right. And then they opened it up and allowed kids to play other sports during their high school season. A fall soccer player could be playing Sunday baseball, but the bona fide team rule member now is you can't miss practice or a game for a non, you know, high school team event. If they're doing that, then they're subject to an MIA rule where they actually lose one quarter of their game. So that isn't as much of a problem as it could potentially be, but I think you hit the nail on the head earlier, Tim, in terms of the repetitive use. You've got kids that are using those same muscles over and over and over again, and I'll speak to soccer. You've got kids finishing up the season in the fall, and then they're going and they're playing indoors, and then when the spring hits, as soon as the snow melts, they're off on a turf field in March and April, and they're playing there, and it's just, particularly with high school kids, 14 to 18, some of them are, those tendons, those soft tissues are still growing. Their bones are growing like crazy, and the soft tissues can't keep up with it. And they're ending up with all kinds of, you know, Achilles tendonitis and patella tendonitis and Osgood slatters, those type of repetitive injuries. So what you were saying earlier, I think, is so important, that different sports use different muscles, and yet they go hand in hand. You know, I've got a bunch of my guys that are on the soccer team play baseball and hockey, and they see a lot of, you know, the similarities in the sports. They're so different, and you got some of the concepts of, you know, 2v1 and creating overloads and the team play, and it, you know, they do go hand in hand.
You know, the other thing, Dave, that just came to mind is these kids are playing so many sports, and sometimes, you know, they're doubling up on the season. Like you said, they're playing baseball in the spring, but then they're in these AAU programs, and they're playing games all year round, and there's multiple sports throughout the year. Is you run into the danger, and again, I've seen it several times, kids just simply burn out from playing much sports.
You're absolutely right, and I'll tell you, we had about 7 or 8 years ago, we had two outstanding, really, really skilled soccer players that were fortunate enough to be able to play Division I soccer, and they played year-round. They were year-round soccer players, outstanding athletes. They would have been three sport athletes in Rockport, probably would have been all-stars in two of them, certainly in soccer, and then one of the others. But they loved soccer, and they thought that's what they wanted to do. Tim, they both stopped playing after their freshman year in college, and they both said, you know, they were burnt. They had had enough.
Yeah, I remember a kid when I was coaching down in Maryland from one of the local teams, outstanding young pitcher, but by the end of his senior year, he had a sore arm, and he just didn't want to play anymore. He had had it.
Dave, I got to ask you here. We're a little short on time here. Can you tell me a little bit about the projections for you guys this year, who you got maybe as captains or who your leaders might be, and,
sure.
And when you guys get underway?
We get underway a week from Saturday at Hamilton Wynnum. Everybody, I believe, is playing that. I think it's October the 3rd is our first match. We're all playing. We're playing a 10-game schedule. We're a little thinner than we were last year. We had a junior-senior dominated squad last year, and we had 10 seniors that graduated that were all involved in the program for a couple of years. We have 10 juniors coming back that can all play, but it drops off after that. We're not as deep as we were last year, but the good thing is that those returning juniors and a couple of the sophomores that are now juniors are ready to go and are going to be able to compete. And given the four 20-minute blocks now, we're playing 20-minute quarters, not two halves, 40-minute halves. We will be able to, if we're a little thinner, we will be able to, you know, catch that rest. In the goal, we've got an all-star coming back, senior captain Camden Wheeler, and he's arguably one of the top three goalies in the league, and there are three or four really good goalies in the league, and he's a returning all-star. In front of him is an all-league player, Austin Matus. He's a five-year player on our varsity team,
wow.
And he's started since he was a freshman. He was an all-league center back last year, and he returned. So we're pretty solid in the middle of our defense there. We've got some seniors that were juniors last year in backup roles that will fill in now as in the wing-back positions, Noah Cook and Jameson Wren. So we're pretty solid in the back. In midfield, we graduated two all-star inside midfielders, and they're being replaced by underclassmen. And that's where we're a little thin, and that's the engine room. But Benin Murdoch is a junior, played a lot of minutes last year, and he's a junior captain. he'll anchor that down, and we'll build around him with Michael Nasella, who was a backup last year as a freshman, but he's a big, strong sophomore now, and he was a strong freshman last year. Got valuable minutes. Up top, we've got two seniors coming back, two juniors that played a lot of minutes for us, Sam Lamont and Kyle Beal up top. And so we're pretty solid down the middle of the field with a little inexperience in the central midfield, but the players in front of them and back of them are pretty solid. And then on the outside, we've got junior Colby Kelly and senior Frew Rowan. They are fast and strong, and they both can finish. So that's a pretty solid group to build from. And then we'll fill in with some of our, you know, younger backups from last year that didn't get a lot of time, and they, at least they know our system, and they'll be good to go.
Coach, look forward to talking to you again soon, seeing you on the waterfront, if not on the field, and I hope this is the most fun, the happiest, most fun season that you guys have ever had.
Well, we feel that way right now. We're just excited to play and to be out there running around, chasing that ball, and we consider ourselves very fortunate and appreciate. You know, I think you're right. We're more appreciative of this season than probably any other one we've had.
I know. Hey, Dave, thanks so much, man. Stay safe.
Okay, Tim, Rick, great talking to you both.
Talk
great
to you later. Thank you.
Thanks,
that is Rockport High School boys soccer coach Dave Curley. Tim Kearns is here. I'm Rick Moore. Coming up next, Gary Larrabee. We're a little bit behind, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Alrighty, we're back a little bit late here, a couple of minutes late, but I want to welcome Gary Larrabee back. Gary, of course, a sports historian, golf writer, and general nice guy, all-around nice guy. Gary, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Rick. I hope you guys are doing equally so.
I am. I don't know if Tim is here or he stepped out for a second. You still there, Tim?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, I thought you were going to go out and take... I saw the International Space Station go overhead, Gary, on Saturday, so the timing is right now. It's going to be... Is it over... Beverly now, Tim?
Yeah, 7:32 is supposed to show up. And it's going to be here for 4 minutes.
All right, well,
to go out and see it.
I can talk to Gary. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll be right back.
All right. See, Gary, the priorities, right?
Absolutely, because I prefer to watch the cow jump over the moon.
Okay. Well, you know, Tim and I are both pseudo astronomers, and so and he helped me with my astronomy class. But anyway, let's get down to it. Where do you want to start? You want to start local, national, or where?
Well, why don't we start with what just wrapped up yesterday, and that's of course the U.S. Open, the delayed U.S. Open by 3 months. That was won by Bryson DeChambeau by 6 shots. He was the only player to shoot under par for the tournament. Shot 6 under. Amazingly, he shot a 3 under 67 yesterday to overtake the third round leader, a young Matthew Wolf. And I think what this is all going to mean in the long run, Rick, is that everybody, all the young golfers out there, especially juniors and collegians, are going to want to bulk up, put on 40 pounds and do some weightlifting, and because that's how Bryson DeChambeau changed himself over the winter and during the pandemic. And he has been a phenomenal golfer since they came back, even though, of course, we talked about Dustin Johnson having won the FedEx Cup and having, you know, shot 30 under to win at TPC Boston. But now we have Bryson DeChambeau, muscular, stocky, not overweight, but I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this amongst our young golfers after the way he played this week, and the fact he's been in contention almost every week since the tour came back. And this may be the new look, because, you know, Tiger Woods did this about mid-career, and it worked for him for a while. But right now, it's the Bryson DeChambeau look, which created the new U.S. Open champion.
Tell me about the course, Gary. Why was it so difficult to shoot par?
It's always been the most difficult U.S. Open course, along with Oakland Hills out in Detroit and Oakmont out in Pittsburgh, near Pittsburgh. But they've always had the highest scores at Wingfoot. Long, heavy rough, very challenging greens, and the scores have always been high there. So what DeChambeau did in shooting 6 under, I think, shocked virtually everybody. Keep in mind, Rick, no one else shot under par.
Right, right.
Only DeChambeau did, but the way he did it and the fact that he did it with a lot of muscle. He's hitting the ball. He's the longest, or maybe the second longest hitter on the tour right now, behind only Cameron Champ. But he has a tremendous short game, tremendous pair of hands, wonderful finesse, and he put it all together to become our latest major champion. And we have to watch and see how Bryson DeChambeau continues this amazing run.
Mm. Hi, Gary, I'm back.
Tim, I think we have to already pick Bryson DeChambeau as the favorite for the Masters. I know it's not for a couple of months, but after the way he just spectacularly shot 6 under par at Wingfoot of all places.
Yeah,
I gotta believe the Masters will fit right into his level, his style of play.
But isn't the Masters one where you've really got to, utilize course management more than a power game of whacking it 320 yards on a drive?
Well, the power game is very much a part of what made Jack Nicklaus a 6-time winner there.
Okay.
And Tiger Woods a 4-time winner. You know, there's still basically no rough at the Masters. The Masters is basically won, as you know, around and on the greens. And the fact that DeChambeau could be so masterfully effective, even playing that golf, and to shoot 6 under, the only player under par, Tim, my goodness.
Right.
DeChambeau is now, I think, competing with Dustin Johnson to be the top player of the year.
You know what made me, as I watched DeChambeau throughout this year, I just noticed the physical difference in him, because I remember him when he first came up, thin kid, long hair. He had the cap, and I'm thinking, he looks more like he belongs at Haight Ashbury than he does on a golf course. And all of a sudden, this year, I just noticed it's like somebody, hooked him up to an air compressor and put about 40 pounds of air into him. He's massive. Well, he is so big. And then I heard right at the end of the tournament when he rolled in that birdie putt, and they said, he made the decision a year ago to bulk up, to get bigger, to get stronger. And watched his tee shot on 18, and they said, he's going to let loose on this thing, and he hit it, 315 yards, basically in the air, off into the right side, into the rocks. But I'm like, holy! I mean, he was just letting it go out there,
and he was very effective with his accuracy off the tee, and of course, he does things a little bit differently, Tim. All of his clubs are the same length, whether it's his driver or his pitching wedge. They all are the same length, and that's something that he likes to have, and it certainly is working for him. But the fact that he transformed himself into a muscle man,
oh yeah,
it's paid off tremendously. He's been in contention virtually every week this year. It's his first major, but the mere fact that he could win and win at Wingfoot by 6 shots with a power game, Tim.
Yeah.
I think it could be a tremendous duel at the Masters. We still got a couple of months before the Masters, but my goodness, I can't wait to see him hopefully duel with Dustin Johnson. Could have an maybe even Tiger too could be an all-time spectacular Masters coming up in December.
Yeah, certainly. I certainly agree with you. If he continued to hone that power game
and hone that accuracy, continue with that accuracy, and you combine that kind of power and distance with accuracy, well, you sure are shortening a golf course.
Well, I think a lot of the junior players and the college players, after watching what DeChambeau has done by putting on this 40 pounds of muscle and mass, will be doing the same thing between now and next spring when they can get their golf games back in competition, at least at the college level. And you're going to see this as the new way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, the lean look of Tiger that so many guys have followed over the last 20 years, we may be seeing more linebacker types than wide receivers.
Well, he's been lean, but he's became very muscular, as you recall, about mid-career, and it certainly served him well. But we'll have to see how this evolves over the next year or so. And let's see how DeChambeau does it his next major at the Masters. That'll be a very telling week to see if he's a flash in the pan or here to stay. And I think he'll become another one of the big five or the big six with McIlroy and Koepka and Johnson and all kinds of great stuff to look forward to.
Right. Gary, I noticed in your column from today, it showed up, Delicio and Francoeur have no fall golf available to them this year. Is there any way that they can get in competitive golf?
There's not too much to offer, Tim. The golf season's pretty much over, and the spring, summer, fall stuff. And as collegiate players, they have to pretty much, if they can find a selected invitational amateur tournament to compete in, they can't, but there'll be nothing for Chris Francoeur representing URI till the spring. And the same thing with Stephen Delicio, who went back to Duke. He had one more year of eligibility because of the pandemic that killed the spring season, and the NCAA let him come back for one year of eligibility, which he's losing the fall part of it because there's no golf at Duke this fall either.
Shush.
Well, on the better side, we have a lot of high school golf kicking off this week, guys, and we're thrilled to see that. And, of course, before we go into that, we'll have to see how that evolves. But I should make note just briefly that Frank Vanna Jr. from Ferncroft and Boxford, you know, he won the New England Senior Amateur last week for like his 17,000th championship he's won as an amateur player over the years. So he's won two Tim Mass Amateurs and I believe 9 or 10 Mass Mid Amateurs. He's been the Richard D. Haskell Mass Golf Player of the Year, I believe, 9 times. He's going after his second Massachusetts Senior Championship at the end of the month at Willow Bend. At 58 years old, Frank Vanner is still going strong in the Gold Meat River. He's about the greatest amateur player we have seen around here, guys. Since Francis, we met.
Amazing, amazing. What do you got coming up this week, Gary, in the Salem News?
Well, it's our last roundup, guys, before we say goodbye till next spring. But we're going to be looking back a little bit on the legacies of Bill Flynn, Danvers's favorite golfing son, who did so much for golf, both locally and regionally during his lifetime. But there's a new part of his legacy, which I was just really exposed to a couple of weeks ago when I visited Wyndham Country Club, which is the dream golf course he always wanted to build. He built it before he died. And his daughter, Joanne Danvers, born and bred, has been the head golf professional, PGA golf professional, and general manager at Wyndham Country Club up just over the border in New Hampshire for 25 years. And she's a classic of a chip off the old man's block, not so much as a son, but certainly as a daughter who's followed in her father's footsteps in a magnificent way.
All right, looking forward to that. That's going to be in the Salem News and Gloucester Times and all the local papers, of course.
Hey, Rick,
yep.
Rick, did you ask Gary about the lead story in his article today?
I did not.
The Nick Faldo Winkiewicz collaboration? We've got to give him at least a minute to talk about this because it's a fascinating story that of all the golf equipment that golfers use and have in their bags, the last thing that anybody thinks of and no one talks about are the shoes. Gary?
Until your feet start hurting on the 13th hole and you get 5 or 6 more holes to go. But it's a great story. It's a local boy who's been trying to break through in the golf industry for 30 years. He's worked for Arnold Palmer. He's worked for a lot of interesting McGregor, I believe, and Bob Winskowitz from Georgetown, a member at Ipswich Country Club, may have struck it gold with Nick Faldo, who's investing in and is a spokesman for this new type of golf shoe called Squares. And read about it in my column, but it's a great story, and Nick Faldo likes these shoes, and Nick Faldo has been looking for a very comfortable golf shoe for 40 years. He won 6 majors moving around changing his different types of shoes, but it's a nice story of a local man making good.
I'll see if I can find that, and we'll link to that, Gary. We will talk next week whether golf season is over or not, okay?
Golf season will not be over, and hopefully the Celtics will be leading their series against the Miami Heat.
All right, well, Mike's going to give us the story on that coming up. Thank you, Gary.
Carry on, man.
Stay safe. All right, bye-bye.
All right,
that is Gary Larrabee. I was going to say Salem Evening News, golf historian. He is a sports historian and golf writer, and we will be right back with Mike Grenier.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we are back now with Mike Grenier, sports writer and longtime sports fan as well, but covering both the North Shore, the pros, and everything else in between. Mike, how you doing?
We're doing fine. It's crunch time, right? The NFL is back in gear, and the Celtics are in a huge series here with the Miami Heat.
What do you got to explain this to me because, they look like they were going to run away with it twice. And they got beaten those games. And then the third time, they didn't look like they were going to run away with it, but they looked like they were in command.
Right. They have blown big leads, Rick, in every game. A 14-point. The one that hurt, I thought, was game one because they had a 14-point lead early in the fourth quarter and ended up losing the game. Now, game two, they had a 17-point lead in the second half and ended up losing the game. And in game three, they led by 18. And it got down to 5. Miami cut it down to 5. And then the Celtics were able to push it back to 10-11 with some free throws. So I give you a stat that's like really kind of astounding. Of course, they played 3 games, including a 5-minute overtime. And they played 149 minutes total for 2 teams. The Celtics have led for 120 of those 149 minutes, which kind of points out what you just said, that the Celtics have kind of dominated major portions of the series, but they haven't been able to hold on to the leads. So hopefully that was a good sign winning game 3. And did the Celtics catch a break like not having to play tonight? Because Gordon Hayward, of course, who was out for virtually 5 weeks with the ankle injury, catches a break here. They don't play tonight because of Monday Night Football and the ratings and all that. They end up having to play Wednesday. They've had they will have had a 4-day rest. And Gordon Hayward, who played 30 minutes the other night, will be a little healthier, hopefully,
you know,
2 nights from now.
Speak to that, then I'll let Tim jump in here, because he wasn't a major scorer or anything, but he was on the floor a lot. And what did that do in terms of stability? Did it help the team stabilize a little bit?
No question. I'll tell you, here's some amazing things. Through the first 3 games, here's what Gordon Hayward brings to the Celtics here, I think, in the immediacy of the situation. Jason Tatum has been averaging 42 minutes per game. Jaylen Brown, 42 minutes per game. Kemba Walker, 39 minutes per game. Marcus Smart, 39 minutes per game. And with Hayward playing 30, 31 minutes the other night, that enables Brad Stevens, the coach, to cut down, hopefully, the minutes of the key players for the remainder of the series. I think it's very important that you don't wear out, especially Jason Tatum and, and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. You just can't wear those people down. And the other thing that Gordon Hayward brings to the table, and I'd love to have Tim comment on this, is against the vaunted Miami Heat zone that the Celtics haven't been able to figure it out or barely able to figure it out, Gordon Hayward gets into the seam of that zone, and he keeps the ball moving. And I thought that was one of the keys to winning the game, even though Gordon only had like 6 or 7 points the other night. He moves the ball against the zone because he knows exactly what he's doing, and you got to move the ball really quick. I heard Kevin McHale speak about that and how to attack the zone defense. For a couple of games, the Celtics were totally baffled, befuddled, mystified, and were caught up in the Miami zone, and they lost those two games.
Well, I'll chip in here, Mike. We talked about this last week.
Yes.
About what role Hayward would play when he came back. And then, again, he'd be coming off the bench, taking up minutes, and, again, his ability to work inside and outside and continually move. It was almost a little reminiscent, if you think about it, John Havlicek, constantly moving and going through the lane, moving in and around the basket, just that constant circular motion.
That's right.
He never stopped, and that was Hayward in the game, so that Miami suddenly had to be aware of where he was going, because he can go to the hoop, he's not afraid, he can hit the mid-range jumper, which we saw, he can also throw in the three, so you have to account for him. And your head's constantly on a swivel looking for him. And one of the announcers even made the point at one point in the game of Hayward's importance was, look at the pass that he just made. He kept the ball moving. And so even the announcers are aware of what he really contributes to the Celtics offense.
Yep. And when you add that, Tim and Rick, to the fact that while the minutes that he's eating up on the floor and moving the ball around, you're giving maybe, you know, Kemba Walker a little bit of a blow. You're giving Tatum a little bit of a blow. You're giving Jaylen Brown a bit of rest. So all those are positive things for the Celtics. So his return, I think, could become a huge boost as this series progresses. Obviously, they're still down 2-1. Very, very important to win game 4 to tie that series up. Otherwise, you're looking at a 3-1 deficit, and it's really difficult to knock off a team when you're down 3-1. So they need game 4. But, you know, we should mention, guys, how great Jaylen Brown was the other night.
I was going to ask you, Gary, Mike, yeah. I was just going to say, did Jaylen Brown look different in that game?
Well, you know, obviously there was so much criticism of the team after the game 2 loss, and Marcus Smart going off in the locker room, and a shouting match that ensued, and chairs supposedly were thrown around the locker room. That seems like very un-Celtic-like through the decades. And of course, you know, there was a lot of speculation about how much that might hurt the team. But I mean, Jaylen Brown came out so strong in game 3. I know he had the 26 points and he shot well. However, to me, and Tim, you must have watched the game. I love the way Jaylen Brown played defense. His deflections and steals, not only did he keep the ball alive, but oftentimes he recovered those deflections and steals and went down and dunked on the other end.
It looked a little Bill Russell-ish once or twice.
It sure did. And, you know, he has a lot of athletic skill, as we know. But he seemed more determined in Game 3. And who knows if that was a spillover from what happened after Game 2 in the locker room, commotion. But Jaylen Brown certainly had his best game of the series. I think he had one of the best games of his career, given the importance of the game and the Celtics needing to get back into the series down 2-0. You know, if he keeps playing like that, obviously the Celtics are going to be tough to beat. But, you know, and of course, Kemba Walker, who's shooting very poorly late in the Toronto series and in the early portion of this Miami series, he's picked it up now again. He's, you know, scoring 20 points a game last couple of games, and he seems to have figured out what the Celtics need him to do, which is to penetrate, dish off, or create his own shot. And, you know, if he can keep the ball moving, of course, he's the other guy, just like Gordon Hayward. He's the guy, that because he's at the top of the key, he needs to move the ball from side to side to his teammates, particularly to Jason Tatum, who's can be a great scorer. He's averaging 25 points a game in this series. So, you know, again, Kemba Walker, always a key in every game.
Tim?
I think that, you know, in terms of Jaylen Brown, I think people underestimate just how quick he is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of times you see him and he'll slash to the basket, but you don't see him in that open court setting where he's able to use that quickness, that big first step, a long reach. You get the hand deflected in there. And that also takes a great deal of athleticism, of balance. That
right.
You can make that deflection and then recover your body and recover the ball and head down the court.
And the other thing too that does too is when he does that a couple of times, you're forcing Eric Spoelstra, the Miami coach, to call a timeout. And there's nothing that's more depressing for a team than not only to get a shot blocked, but then to see the opposing player head down the court and dunk on you. So, you know, it's really a momentum builder when Jaylen Brown can do those extraordinary things. And he can do extraordinary things. And you know, Tim, I think the other factor we should point out is, of course, Bam Adebayo, the Miami center, has been a dominant player in this series.
Whoa.
He had 26 points and 16 rebounds in Game 3. Tice can only do so much with him because Tice is undersized. Now, once Tice gets in foul trouble, which, of course, has been happening in every single game, who does Brad Stevens turn to? Robert Williams obviously isn't ready, even though he's 6'11" and is very athletic. Not ready, doesn't know how to play defense in the NBA yet. And Cantor is just a liability on defense. So he turns to Grant Williams, a 6'6" rookie out of Tennessee, and Grant Williams is playing the guy physical. I mean, he's giving up a lot of inches, but at least he's playing physical and standing up to and playing strong positional defense. For the Celtics, I think he's been a little bit of a savior for the Celtics in that at least they're not getting blown out when Tice is out of the game because his kid knows how to play his defense.
Sounds a lot.
Block he made the other night, Mike.
Yeah.
Come up from
yeah.
behind and tap it off the glass. I mean, put it off the glass pretty authoritatively. But,
yep.
I mean, what hustle coming down when Miami basically had a fast break and he came out of nowhere.
Right. I really love the way he's playing. Don't we wish that he was, you know, 6'8" or 6'9" as opposed to 6'6", but it shows you that, you know, obviously the other guys have a lot of work to do, meaning Robert Williams and Cantor, and who knows if he's going to be with Boston next year. But Cantor, he's an intriguing player in a sense, right, Tim? Around the basket on offense, he's a scorer. He'll give you that 8-10 points in 6 or 7 minutes, and you say, wow, he's doing great. But on the other hand, on the defensive end, he gets burned a lot. So, you know, I think it's a catch-22 for Coach Stevens. You know, he has to kind of look at all the aspects of what Cantor brings to the floor and what he can't bring to the floor. So you've got to go with the reliable guys. And in this case, it's been Grant Williams, who's been more reliable as the backup to Tice. And don't we wish Tice could just stay out of foul trouble for one game? Because he's a tremendous passer. He knows what he's doing. You know, sometimes he takes those lob passes from Marcus Smart and he dunks the ball. And, you know, it's all great. But he's got to stay on the floor. He's been getting in foul trouble in every game. And, of course, so it's a dangerous situation when he's in foul trouble. But, you know, the bottom line is the Celtics are in the series as they head to Game 4 Wednesday night. And Gordon Hayward, I think, will get an opportunity to play as many minutes, if not more. And his shooting will probably pick up. I can see him scoring 15 or 18 points in the next game, whereas he only got 6 or 7 points in the first game back after being out for 5 weeks. So Gordon Hayward, to me, is a very important cog in the machine as we head into Game 4.
Yeah, he's just, again, you know, you monitor his minutes, you put him in those critical junctions as you identify him, you know, make Miami adjust to him, and again, give him as much rest as possible. Again, they lucked out with this extra day off. And again, for Tice doesn't get any benefits of the dump on the referees. If he taps the guy, he puts his hands up, it's a foul. So
right, exactly.
There's nothing really you can do to save Tice, you know, simply because he's not a name individual.
Correct.
So he gets penalized for that.
Yeah, he's not Anthony Davis, right? You know, the Laker great player. He gets the benefit of a lot of calls, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
And Tice will never get those calls because he's not a superstar player. It's sad that referees actually officiate the game along those lines, but you know, and they would probably deny that they do it, but the superstars get the calls. And you know, you just watch the Lakers play, and obviously LeBron James and Anthony Davis get the calls.
Oh, yeah.
I saw one
well,
quote.
We also know that for a long period of time, sort of Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson.
Right. Michael Jordan. You can go up and down the line. You know, Michael Jordan, everybody. All the superstars get the calls. I'm sorry, Rick. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, that's fine. No, I was just saying. I saw one quote that I've seen a number of times in sports columns and in sports stories, where one of the Miami players said, "You know, we can't keep playing from behind. We can't keep doing this."
Right.
And I've seen that a lot of times, and that was an interesting little admission.
Well, yeah, and like I pointed out, Rick, at the beginning of at the top of this segment of the show, the Celtics have led 120 of the 149 minutes, and you're right, they're playing from behind. You keep waiting for Miami to cave in when they're behind by 15, and
yeah.
the deficit become 25. Maybe that happens in Game 4, and then you're looking at a different after that Game 5, the Celtics would have a clear advantage. So you're hoping the Celtics can keep their pedal to the metal, because for the most part, 80% of the time, they've dominated, maybe 90% of the time, they've dominated these first three games.
Yeah.
But they've kind of just, choked it away, they've blown the leads, whatever you want to call it. They have been stagnant on offense early in the series, particularly in Game 1, when you saw Jason Tatum and Kemba trying to go 1-on-5, and Isaiah Thomas, the former Pistons, analyzing the game, said you had 10 eyes on 2, meaning Miami could concentrate. They have 5 defensive players, 10 eyes on the 2 eyes that either Jason Tatum or Kemba Walker have on the ball. So it was pretty easy to defend 5-on-1, you know?
Yeah.
So now it's a little bit different with Gordon Hayward in there, working the zone, keeping the ball moving. Ball movement is the most underrated part of NBA basketball, because so many players love to isolate and go 1-on-1. But if you keep the ball moving, it keeps you from going stagnant, and it just gives you so much more better opportunities on offense when you move the ball.
I remember Red on Round Ball, and one of the things that sticks with me is not only ball movement, but also movement without the ball.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Tim mentioned John Havlicek, certainly my favorite Celtic of all time, with all due respect to Larry Bird. But I thought that John Havlicek was, you know, got to maximize his ability. But he played for Auerbach. Even though he's a great player, he'd come off the bench and be the illustrious sixth man. And he would bring energy, constant movement, with and without the ball, Rick. Great point, because he did it without the ball, and the Celtics had such great passes, especially Bob Cousy, early in his career, Sam Jones, Casey Jones, hitting Havlicek with the passes. I mean, you know, some of our folks listening might not have heard some of those names, but man, they were among the best in the history of the NBA.
Amen to that. Mike, we'll do it again next Monday.
Yep, sounds great. And maybe, yes, Tim.
Bring back the weave.
I'm sorry?
Bring back the weave.
The weave?
Yes, exactly.
The weave, that was the offense that the Celtics ran.
That's right.
Russell at the foul line, and everybody else ran around him.
That's right. And then he was a terrific passer himself, obviously, and just the ultimate defensive player and shot blocker, and he would keep the ball inbound.
Yeah, yeah, that was what's amazing. Yep.
You know, if Brad Stevens should do one thing, is put Robert Williams in front of a TV showing Bill Russell blocking the ball and keeping the ball inbounds for himself or his teammates to gather the ball and head out on the fast break.
He'd block it.
That's the way they lived. That's the way they lived.
He'd block it to someone. And I remember reading, he said, I know what you're going to do before you do.
Right. I mean,
you know who'd be just as good for him to watch?
Who was that?
Dave Cowens.
Cowens.
Center against the ones that he did.
Yep.
Okay, here's how you play your center at your height.
Definitely, still to this day, I think, even though he's in the Hall of Fame, probably one of the most underrated players in the history of the league, because he did so much with being a 6'8" center at a time when there were still a lot of 7-foot centers playing, 6'11" guys, 6'10". Cowens was undersized, but his desire, his quickness, and his overall basketball acumen, his basketball IQ, was off the charts. I mean, I had the pleasure of seeing him play in person hundreds of times, and he was such a pleasure to watch. Just a great all-around player.
Yep.
All right, Mike, it's been fun. Let's hope they bring home the bacon on Wednesday, and we can talk some good stuff next week.
That's right. Yeah, by then we might be talking hopefully about the Lakers or something, or let's not get ahead.
Yeah, I know. But we can hope. We can dream. That's good.
We can dream.
We'll think positive. Think positive. I don't want to hope, but we'll think positive.
All right.
All right, Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you later. Stay safe.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports writer, longtime sports writer, very knowledgeable about just about everything, but especially with the Celtics. Tim, anything else?
No, I'm good.
Did you see the ISS go over?
I did, and you know, Rick, it was crazy. I actually called Medium out to take a look. It appeared that you could actually see, as it was going past, the left solar panel.
There are certain configurations when it's in certain mood and the light is a certain way when you can. And it's remarkable, isn't it?
Well, it was there tonight. I was like, I'm looking, I'm going, wait a minute, that looks like a solar panel.
Yeah. Yeah, Saturday night all we could see was the bright, you know, the bright reflection.
Yep. Yep.
You know, but still, it's quite a thing. Well, hey, thanks, Tim. We'll talk to you next week. Stay safe.
Okay, you too, brother.
Thanks, Coach.
Yep.
All right, that is Tim Kearns, our MSO analyst and ambassador of goodwill. I'm Rick Moore. I want to thank you for being with us. Let people know about our little program here. We continue it. I've been doing this, I don't know, 10, 15 years now. And we can be reached at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. So on behalf of Tim, we thank all of our guests tonight, and thanks to our producer and engineer as well, Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. This is msonewsports.com.